We're doing Chazon Ish, Emunah u'Bitachon. We're up to the third chapter, the 15th paragraph. And the Chazon Ish had been elaborating on an example. He gave an example, and off of this example, he's been illustrating many points that are very fundamental to our attitude, to our approach, to what true Emunah means. And the Chazon Ish had explained in the first chapter, Emunah is the recognition that Hashem can make anything happen at any time. Bitachon is that even when we're faced with a dire situation, and it feels like Hashem is certainly not about to do anything to change the situation, and we better fight in order to ensure the proper outcome, even then we have to remember that Hashem is still in charge. You know, a person came to me one evening and he said his relative has been in the hospital for 2 hours, they couldn't stop the bleeding. The relative underwent an operation, and for 2 hours the doctors are fighting to save his life, to stop the bleeding. He said to me, what am I supposed to do? So I said, daven. Number one, daven. I said, number one is, make sure he has good doctors. I said, I don't know if you could affect that at this point, and then they're fighting for his life, but here, you know, here's a phone number of someone who, in that hospital, knows who the best doctors are. Make sure he has the best doctors trying to keep him alive. After you've done that, number two, so you can't help in a factual way on the ground, so you have to try and help in another way. So now daven, that's the mitzvah of prayer. The mitzvah of prayer is when we're faced with situations that we clearly see we need help from above, that's when we have a biblical mitzvah to pray. So that's number two. So bitachon is when we're faced with a situation that seems to be in the hands of man or in the hands of fate or in the hands of luck, and it does not seem like it's in Hashem's hands. That's when we retain that recognition. No, it is in Hashem's hands. That's how the Chazon Ish defined bitachon. And then the Chazon Ish went on to discuss how the applications of emunah and bitachon are found in how we deal in our daily dealings. Because if we recognize that Hashem is running the show, then we're going to work with the system of the halakha. And the halakha, the Torah gives us a manner in which we're supposed to behave in business and in dealings with our neighbors. And he gave us this example of a school, a group of educators that are teaching in town, and suddenly a new group of educators comes in and starts competing. And the halakha says that that's permissible. And then the Chazon Ish said, well, if the halacha would say that the second group that suddenly shows up and competes with the first group are in the wrong, so then the first group would be entitled to do everything to fight them. But if the second group is in the right, then the first group has no right to fight them. So he says, you can't just look at this and say, ethically it should be this way. You learn the halacha and then you understand who's in the right. The same scenario, you could think, maybe I should fight with this side or that side. And the answer to that question lies in the ruling of the halacha. When the halacha says who's in the right, that's who we should be fighting for. The Chazon Ish continues and says, once we've understood that, we have to understand another point, and that is, why fight? If I'm in the right, so we're often faced with this question, should my attitude be, if Hashem wants me to get this, I'll get it, so then I don't have to fight for it? Or should my attitude be, I'll fight for it? Where's the balance? And how do we understand that balance? I'll give you two examples for this story. Okay, we have a medical example. Doctors will routinely recommend that people get checked. How much do you have to check? So if a person gets pregnant in the United States, I think they get 3 ultrasounds. If they get pregnant in Israel, where the government funds your ultrasounds, you get 5 ultrasounds. And now, there are people who are very antsy, and they go into the hospital, and they get an ultrasound every week. They want to make sure the baby's developing right. I'll pay for it. I want to know. Today, you have people who will do all kinds of genetic testings because they want to know, what color eyes is he going to have? And is it going to be male or female? And can I ensure that there are no genetic defects? How far are we supposed to go in this? You're going to date someone. You're going to think you should get married. And then you're going to wonder, maybe we should check that we don't share genetic defects. Well, the average person has 5 genetic defects. There are many out there, thousands. Now, you cannot get tested for all of them unless you want to invest a lot of money and wait over 30 years. Are you about to do that? Just because you're going to get married to this person? So maybe you should check out everything under the sun. How far do you go? Or do you say, I don't check anything? But what about Tay-Sachs if you're Ashkenazi and she's Ashkenazi? Should you check for that? There are certain diseases that are more prevalent among Ashkenazi Jewry. Should you check for them? Where do you draw the line? Should a woman get a mammogram every week, every month, every year? Do we listen to the doctors? How often should a man go and they say after a certain age you should have a colonoscopy? Really? Are we really concerned about that? Where do we draw the line? How far should our concern be? So in medical issues, we have this question. And the question is really a question of emunah. At what point am I supposed to say, I should trouble myself with it? And at what point am I supposed to say, Hashem's running the world? So that's what we're going to discuss in this chapter. The same question lies in a business. I have two friends, and one of them was given exclusivity to sell cakes in a certain establishment. And the other one was given exclusivity to sell everything but cakes in the same establishment. So they're each given exclusivity. So the guy who was given exclusivity to sell everything but cakes comes to me one day, and he brings these small cupcakes. And he says, the other fellow sells cakes for 5 shekel. I want to sell these cupcakes for 1.5 shekels. Is there a problem? Am I competing with his exclusivity? And I said, you have everything under the sun to sell. Why are you looking to walk the line and ruin his livelihood? Because if you're going to sell those cupcakes at 1.5 shekels, I believe you will harm his livelihood. So even though halachically, it could be you're in the right, but is it moral? Is it ethical? You were given exclusivity on every other item. You need to fight him on his item? Why do you have to do that? And the guy didn't buy it. He said, I want to go to the court and I want to know if I'm permitted or prohibited. Well, maybe he's right. So what we're going to learn right now is a discussion in the Chazon Ish of this question.
The example just reminds me of that famous fellow, they should get over one's judged on how they do what's permitted.
I didn't know that.
It's a very
great one.
Oh, wow. You talk about all the time. You can eat, you know, what healthy and kosher or whatever, but is that the right thing to do? So your answer to him.
I was bothered by his question.
Yeah.
I believe that wasn't right. Is there a shortage of what to sell? Why?
You have to do it. Are you starving? You're not selling
right?
Enough stuff where it absolutely is a must. What's your
he has every item under the sun aside from cakes. So why do you have to compete with him on that? What's
people
listening? But the teachers, the educators who are the incumbents, the ones in the city, that let's say we say, if you have a tradesman, if I have a butcher shop, if I have a bike repair shop, so then I could say, don't come to my town and compete with me, because you're hurting my livelihood. We said in education, you cannot say that. But in other areas, you could say that. Eino al tzad mitziut, el al tzad chiyuv ha-ishtadlut. So the Chazon Ish says, don't think that the reason you're allowed to say, don't open a bike repair shop next to mine, is because factually you cannot succeed when you have competition next door. But there is a concept called chiyuv ha-ishtadlut. It is incumbent upon us to do our due diligence. We're responsible to put in a certain effort. That's what's called hishtadlut. And a person can't say, I'll sit back and whatever's supposed to happen is going to happen. No. On some level, I have to do due diligence. Shekol mizonotav shel adam ktsuvin om Rosh Hashanah v'ad Yom Kippur. Technically, on Rosh Hashanah, it was decided how much money you're going to make. Ve'lo yechsar lo im yeh kan uman shel matachit. And you're not going to lose anything just because he opened the bike shop next door. Ve'lo yotir lo im lo yeh. And you won't make more money if there won't be a bike shop next door. We're on page Chavchet, the second line. Rak imatzi le'akev, nichnase b'chov ha'ishtadlut mitzido. The only thing is that if you are permitted halachically to tell the other guy, I don't want you to do this, if the halacha sides with you, so then that's part of due diligence. V'chov achakat ha-nezek mitzad re'o. And just like we're responsible to ensure that our next door neighbor doesn't damage us, if the neighbor is, let's say, the neighbor wants to play catch with a bowling ball. So what's going to happen when he's going to miss the ball and it'll fly through your window? So you could say, hey, buddy, I'm not comfortable with you playing catch next to my window or next to my car with a bowling ball. So sometimes we have to ensure to move away damages from ourselves. And sometimes we have to ensure that we don't come close to damaging others. I can't play catch with a bowling ball next to someone else's car. So I have a responsibility to do due diligence to try and ensure I make a living. And he has a responsibility to try and ensure he doesn't harm where the halacha doesn't permit him to do this to open the store. V'ilomatzi me'akev, and if the halacha says you may not prevent him from opening a store next door, so then en bo mishum chove ishtadlut. So then the halacha has defined for you that this is not part of your responsibility to do due diligence. Then al chavro mishum mazik, and then your friend, if the halacha would say that he's permitted to open that shop, so then there's nothing wrong. He isn't doing any harm. But you have to remember, Hashem gives each person his needs, and so undoubtedly he will give a person what he's supposed to get. And the fact that we pursue reasons that are imagined, we say, let me ensure he cannot open competition next door to me because that will ensure I make a good livelihood. No, that, he says, is vain. We work with the system of halacha, and if the halacha says that he's allowed to open the competition next door, then you don't have to worry. You're not going to lose by it. And if the halacha would side with him, he was right. I still felt that it wasn't nice because I looked at it the other way. I looked at it as, why do you think you need to hurt him in order to make parnasa? You're right. If the halacha would say, according to this, he's within his right. I agree. The problem was that we were partners in the business. He wanted to go to court, and we were partners in the business, and I was the major partner. He held like 35% and I held 65%. So I had veto power. I'm saying, and I said, based on this Chazon Ish, he said based on this Chazon Ish, like you just said, if I'm within my rights halachically, I'm allowed to do it. And I said based on this Chazon Ish, even if you're within your rights, why do you have to hurt him? He will constantly look at this and say, look at them. They're taking away my... He will feel bad. Technically, based on this Chazon Ish, he shouldn't feel bad, right? Because whatever he has coming, if the halacha sides with us, then we're entitled to do it. And I said, based on this Chazon Ish, you don't need it. You got everything else to compete that won't compete with him. So why touch his nerves? You don't. I didn't view this as important ishtadlut. If you could sell everything under the sun except for cakes, you have to walk the line of halacha and say... You won't make your living without it. I could tell you that I broke the partnership because of this. This was one of the major reasons that I pulled out of the deal with him. Because I felt like it's not a healthy perspective. But you're right. He told the line of the Chazon Ish, and he said, if the halacha says I'm permitted, so then I'm not hurting his livelihood. You're right. That was his claim. And I'm saying, I just looked at the Chazon Ish from the other side. But technically, I agree with you. I agree that within the, if the letter of the law sides with it, I can't say he's wrong. I can say that I don't see a reason why our parnasa has to deal with competing with him where it hurts him. Why? Even if I'm allowed to. That was my approach. But you're right. You're 100% right. That's what he came. He claimed this Chazon Ish and I claimed the Chazon Ish. We each came with this Chazon Ish.
Like if you have a small town where competition would be disastrous for someone who had a Marcolin, but that person takes advantage of that and charges people, you know, inflated prices, you know, then the system doesn't work. It has to be, right? I mean, you know, it's designed for, it takes a certain amount of...
We didn't go into the details. I'm saying part of the details we discussed a few weeks ago is that if I live in the town, I'm allowed to open a store. The issue here was you don't live in the town. You're coming from another town to compete with me in my town.
Right, but even, let's say, if there's town supports one store, and that guy takes advantage of that because he knows, oh, I see what you're saying. If he was taking big advantage, then someone in town would.
Right. Right. I'm saying the halacha gives us the ways out. The courts can also come in and say you have to lower your prices. You see it happens. I'm saying
As a novice, it happens a lot in Gemara where you forget about the great leeway the courts do have.
Ve'omnam, bizman shemesim treo lematrat chitzav shel merirut yomo. But what happens when a person decides that his own bitterness, when he's unhappy with his livelihood, he constantly blames the other guy. The reason I'm not doing well is because of him. So then anytime something goes wrong, he says it's all because of him. If his friend is within his rights according to the laws of the Torah, so then the reason you're upset at him, says the Chazon Ish, is because you don't have enough emunah. If the halacha says you're within your rights to do it, so technically, like you said, I could sell the cakes. If the halacha says that selling cakes for 1.5 shekel is not a problem of impinging on his exclusivity of the 5 shekel cakes, so then, and I could tell you that there were many people who felt like him. There are many people over there who wanted him to sell the 1.5 shekel cakes. They said, we can't afford the 5 shekel cakes and we're not buying them, but we would buy a 1.5 shekel cupcake. So then, if the halacha would side with him, then the guy who's upset with him, it's because he's not working with emunah. If you're working with emunah, part of emunah is, I work with this system. One of the fundamental points of being a God-fearing person is to believe that no one could harm me or make it good for me unless Hashem decided they should be allowed to do it. Yes? Okay.
If the cakes, even though you talk to a couple people and he said, I would buy 1.5, I'm sure he was selling plenty of cakes at 5.
Right.
Or else he wouldn't be in business.
Right. V'omnam imre ose resha shelo b'mishpat. Now you'll ask, what happens if the other guy is being evil? He's not working in accordance with halacha. The halacha says he may not compete with me, and he does. And now I have an issue, and suddenly you see situations where a person does things that are incorrect halachically, and they could force the other guy to lose his business. So what are you going to say then? So Yitachen, the Chazon Ish says, it could be, Shalav Ne'emar, that about such a person it says, Migalgalin Chov Al Yidei Chayav, that Hashem wanted to bring bad things to the world. He brought it through a bad person. We say Hashem brings good things to the world through good people and bad things through bad people. In heaven they decided a person should be punished, he should lose his livelihood. He could have had a fire in the store, he could have had a court case, he could have had the government inspector come down and say, you know, you did A, B, and C, and we're going to fine you 1 million shekel. And Hashem did it, that the competition came as unfair competition. So that doesn't absolve the other person from their responsibility. In heaven they will be punished for doing what they did. In heaven, they decided that this person should be the recipient of this punishment, and they did it through someone evil. Meaning, in heaven, we have this concept, Megalgalin Chov Al Yedei Chayav, which, by the way, in this short line, the Chazon Ish gave us an insight into how we're supposed to view the Holocaust. In heaven, it was decreed that 6 million Jews were supposed to die. There could have been a massive fire. There could have been an earthquake. There could have been a tsunami. There could have been many ways they did it in heaven. They chose to allow this to happen at the hands of evil people. So that, whatever, that was part of, they're going to be taken to task. But in heaven it was decreed 6 million Jews were supposed to die, which does not absolve the people who did it. But when a person does it based on the Torah, then you can't say that he is an emissary for evil. And then we say, he did not affect his friend at all. Our sages say that you cannot take from your friend even a minuscule amount of their livelihood. Our sages say that with a funny story that happened in the temple. That there was a family in the temple that was behaving improperly. They knew the secrets of how to make the ktores. And the rabbi said, reveal the secrets. Other people have to know how to make the spices burn so that it goes up in a straight pillow and pillar, and even the winds can't move that pillar of smoke. And the family, Beit Avtinas, said, we're not revealing the secrets. And the rabbi said, if you don't reveal the secrets, we will bring in the scientists from Alexandria and Egypt, and they will make the spices. And they'll teach us, they'll figure it out, and they'll teach us. And the family of Avtinas said, we're not revealing the secret. They had an excuse. They said, maybe they'll use it for idols if we reveal it. So the Talmud says the rabbis fired them. They said, fine, if you're not listening to us, you're not telling anyone else how to do this mitzvah, we're going to fire you. They fired them. They brought in the scientists from Alexandria. And the scientists sat and worked and came up with formula after formula. None of them worked. None of them worked right. So here they were offering ktores, and it didn't come out as well as when the family of Avtinas did. So after much experimentation, they came back to the family of Avtinas and said, okay, you're rehired. And the family of Avtinas said, no, you fired us, we're gone. And they had to double their salary. They had to give them a much higher salary in order to get them to work again. And the Talmud views that as the hand of Hashem, that even though the family of Avtinas behaved inappropriately, in heaven it was not decreed that they should lose their livelihood. The Talmud says this is an example of this concept, that Hashem will not allow a person to lose their livelihood because of someone else. Hashem might decide that a person should lose their livelihood, but no one can compete and take away from you what you deserve in heaven. Whatever they decide in heaven you're going to make, that's what you're going to make. And it doesn't matter if the rabbis think they could bring in scientists from Alexandria, it won't work, because Hashem didn't want that livelihood to be taken from the family of Avtinas. Now, the flip side of that is that the family of Avtinas should have appreciated that and revealed the secret. They held on to the secret, and that way they held on to the parnasa for their family. And in fact, they should have understood that they wouldn't have lost anything by giving away the understanding of how to do the mitzvahs. It's a double-edged sword. But nonetheless, that's what the Chafetz Chaim says here. If
the
you
problem of it, because what's the lesson that the family learns?
Just one second. If you act in accordance with the halacha, the Chafetz Chaim says, you're not losing anything. And if you lost, it's not because you acted in accordance with halacha. That's the attitude we get from Emunah. You're saying in that story, that's why I said it's a humorous story.
Right.
Because you see, they got the better of the rabbis there.
And that's, you know, they may have won in the short run, but when their kids see that, you know, at some point, it's not so good. I mean, if you want to see this.
But they also lost. Like the Mishnah says, Shem Reshaim Yirkav, the Mishnah in Tractate Yuma. Every child knows the name Beit Avtinas because they are mentioned in shame. So for millenniums now, after the temple's been destroyed, every child learns that Mishnah and sees that the Mishnah says about them, may the name of the wicked rot.
Right.
So I'm saying, so they got a little bit more money, but they're famous till today for being inappropriate.
Infamous.